Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 2, contents of the Gita summarized, text number 36. Avachavaram shavahun varadi shantita vahita indantastava samvartam tato dukantaram nukim avacha unkind vadan fabricated words cha also bahun many vadishanti will say tava your ahita enemies indanta while vilifying tava your samaratam ability ta then that dukkha taram more painful nu of course kim what is there. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Your enemies will describe you in many unkind words and scorn your ability. What could be more painful for you? Purport. Lord Krishna was astonished in the beginning at Arjuna's uncalled for plea for compassion. Now he described his compassion as befitting the non-Aryans. Now in so many words he has proven his statements against Arjuna's so-called compassion. Text 37. Tato va prapise swargam jitva va bhakshase mahim tasmayu tishta konteya hidaya krita nishchaya. O Sunakundi, either you'll be killed on the battlefield, attain the heavenly planets, or you'll conquer and enjoy the earthly kingdom. Therefore get up with determination and fight. But although there was no certainty of victory for Arjuna's side, he still had to fight. For even being killed there, he would be elevated to the heavenly planets. Krishna began this chapter, began his teachings, with explaining for the first 30 verses, from 13 to 30, that we're not this body. So that's the background of all knowledge, the eternality of the self, and the difference between the self and the body, the soul and the body. And then Krishna starts about your duty as a kshatriya. Almost getting into the idea of karma yoga. And the idea that if you die in the battlefield, then you go to the heavenly planets. And if you win, you can conquer and enjoy the earthly kingdom. Not quite karma yoga. Self-centeredness. But Krishna is trying to tell Arjuna that even if you want to be self-centered, still, you should look after yourself. And even if you're in Maya, still, the best alternative in Maya is to fight. Because if you don't fight, and you're thinking everyone will think you're a nice person, well, they'll think you're a coward. And if you don't want to be ashamed, criticized, then you should fight. But if you fight and you lose, then you go to the heavenly planets. So it's not so bad if you lose. And if you win, then you get the earthly kingdom. So in every respect, it's in his, if you're in Maya, Arjuna, then you should fight anyhow, because that's the best alternative, materially speaking, is to act as a kshatriya and fight in the war, because that way you'll win, no matter what happens. And if you don't fight, you won't go to the heavenly planets, your reputation will be spoiled, you won't get the earthly kingdom. So if you're in the bodily concept of life, well, not quite the bodily concept, because the idea of the heavenly planets implies within it the afterlife. that there is a destination after you leave this body. But even if you're you want to enjoy the material world, still, you should fight. But Krishna is not going to stop there. Otherwise, there would be no reason to have a Bhagavad Gita. You could just go on the internet, you'll find many books that say the same thing. How to enjoy in the material world. So now Krishna will go into detachment from the result. That even if you weren't going to go to the heavenly planets, even if people didn't criticize you, even if you're not going to get the earthly kingdom, still you should just fight for the sake of fighting. On one side, it's for your, Krishna is giving arguments for Arjuna's sense gratification, and now he'll give arguments for self-realization, beginning with karma yoga. That as long as you're attached to anything, either your reputation or the results of the work, whether it's going to the heavenly planets or it's going to win the earthly kingdom, still it won't help you uncover your actual spiritual identity. Therefore, he'll say, Sukadu kesame kritva lava labo triadrio, tato yudayu desva, naivam papa hapsasi. Do thou fight for the sake of fighting without considering happiness and distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat, and by so in doing you shall never incur in sin. Purport, the Lord now directly says that Arjuna should fight for the sake of fighting because he desires the battle. There is no consideration of happiness or distress, profit or gain, victory or defeat in the activities of Krishna consciousness. That everything should be performed for the sake of Krishna is transcendental consciousness. So there is no reaction to material activities. He who acts for his own sense gratification, either in goodness or in passion, is subject to the reaction, good or bad. But he who has completely surrendered himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness is no longer obliged to anyone, nor is he a debtor to anyone, as one is in the ordinary course of activities. Devarshi bhutatman rinim pritrinam niking guru nayam rinitirajan sarvatmara yaksharanam sharanyam kato mukundam parityagatum. Anyone who is completely surrendered to Krishna, Mukunda, giving up all other duties, is no longer a debtor, nor is he obliged to anyone. Not the demigods, nor the sages, nor the people in general, nor kinsmen, nor humanity, nor forefathers. That is the indirect hint given by Krishna to Arjuna in this verse, and the matter will be more clearly explained in the following verses. The Vanashram Dharma system is based upon sacrificing for Vishnu. Everyone has to have some reason why they're doing something. It's impossible to do something without some purpose, whether it be sense gratification or Krishna consciousness or something else. Everyone has some goal in mind. Therefore, Krishna says that at least if you fight because Krishna, Vishnu or Krishna, whoever wants you, because Krishna is not directly mentioned, Krishna hasn't really gotten into very much about his being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He hasn't mentioned it yet, except for the fact that he's eternal, like everyone else is eternal. But in the background, Krishna, he hasn't even mentioned really the sacrifice for Vishnu. But fight for the sake of fighting, without considering happiness and distress. Now Arjuna, he knew he was a Kshatriya, and he knew the Vanashram system was Jagavai Vishnu, because the Brahmins, the Shudras would assist, the Vaishyas would grow the food, and generally speaking, the most important thing is that they protected the cows so they could get ghee, which was used in the sacrifice. The Kshatriyas would arrange the sacrifice, the Brahmins would chant the mantras, and the sacrifice was to satisfy Vishnu. And from the sacrifice to Vishnu, rains would come and people would be able to survive. And in order to protect the people, protect the sacrifice, the performance that people were performing sacrifice, the Kshatriyas were there so the sacrifice would go on unimpeded. When Lord Ramachandra and Lakshman were requested by Vishwamrita Muni to go to stop the disturbance of their sacrifice, that was clear that that was the duty of the Kshatriyas. So Ram and Krishna went on Vishwamrita's direction, learned the mantras to create Bala and Abala weapons, protected the sacrifice, killed one of the demons, Subhanu, and hit the other one, Marichi, 800 yojanas away from the sacrifice. Didn't kill him. Therefore, they protected the sacrifice. Because only by sacrifice do we actually get what we need. Arjuna understood that. Therefore, he understood that he was a Kshatriya and that he was supposed to fight in the battle. But he shouldn't expect, Krishna says. First, he allures him with the idea that you can go to the heavenly planets, or you can win a big earthly kingdom, or your reputation will be protected. They'll think you're a big man in the society. But then now he says, don't forget about that. It's an introduction to the rest of the next part of the Bhagavad Gita about karma yoga. Forget about it. Just do your fight for the sake of fighting without considering happiness and stress, loss or gain, victory or defeat. And by doing so, you'll never incur a sin. In other words, Arjuna is afraid of committing sin. But Krishna said, if you just fight for the sake of fighting without attachment, then you won't incur sin. Sin comes from your attachment to the result. That I want to enjoy or I want to renounce. That's mentality of wanting to enjoy in the material world. And because we want to enjoy in the material world, we get the reaction for it. Krishna bahir mukha bhogavan chitare nikatastha tari japiti dare. That as soon as we turn our face away from Krishna, then at once maya captures us and slaps us down into material concepts of life. Therefore, it's not 100% accurate that if you just do the fight for the sake of fighting, then you won't incur a sin. You have to do the sake of fighting for Krishna. Otherwise, if you forget Krishna, no one just goes out to a war and just kills his relatives for the sake of doing it. There has to be some other idea behind what Arjuna was doing. That at least Vishnu. Now, Krishna was not so far. I mean, in one sense, well, here he's telling Arjuna to fight because it's hard to say because how Arjuna was looking at Krishna at this particular time, who he thought he was, whether he thought he was his friend or he remembered that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It would seem that he just thought Krishna was his friend, giving him some good advice, or his spiritual master, actually, because he understood that Krishna knew more than he did. So, in that sense, as a representative of Vishnu, at least, or whoever Arjuna he thought was the Supreme Lord, Krishna was telling him to fight, because he wanted the fight. Because Arjuna had surrendered to him, asking him what to do. Now Krishna is telling him, you're not this body. Then he tells him that it's in his material interest to fight. And now he's telling him, fight, because I want you to fight, without considering all the other things I just told you. So Krishna is gradually bringing Arjuna in 2 hours to higher consciousness, something that may take people lifetimes. Arjuna was a good student. Could you imagine, you know, you tell someone he comes to the Sunday feast and you tell him that you're eternal. Oh, that's nice to know. And besides that, you know, if you don't do what I'm telling you to do, people are going to go out, you could criticize you. Who's going to criticize you in this world nowadays? They think you're crazy if you do what Krishna asks you to do. And even if you don't worry about people criticizing, still, you know, you should fight because it's in your interest. You can go to the heavenly planets. Who believes in the heavenly planets? Who knows anything about the heavenly planets? And you can gain the worldly kingdom. Well, that's not a bad idea. But most people aren't kshatriyas. And then if you jump right in the next sentence, well, all right, don't worry about whether you gain anything or lose anything. Don't worry about the heavenly planets, wherever they are, or your reputation. I'm just asking you to fight, so you should fight for the sake of fighting. We're not going to get too many people surrendered like that. And this is only the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. Wait till we get into Karma Yoga. So Arjuna obviously was absorbed in the Vedic conceptions of life, and he was a special personality chosen by Krishna to hear Bhagavad Gita. But we shouldn't think it's so easy. Like one of my disciples wrote to me, he said, about his different things that he's going through. And then he also mentioned in the letter that one of our sannyasis told him that he can come to the stage of nishtha in a year. If he really has a great desire. Of course, if you have a great desire. How can you do, how to develop such a great desire? How long does that take? We don't even know what nishtha means, what to speak of developing a desire for it. So we have to be, when we read this, we have to be a little practical, you know. At least we should try this particular verse practice a little bit during the day. I'm just doing this for the sake of Krishna. We can remember that for 5 seconds during the day, we're doing quite well for that day. We just remember, I'm just doing this because Krishna wants me to do it. And then, you know, maybe tomorrow we can get into verse 39. See if we can apply that one. What to speak of the next, you know, 600 verses or so. But we should, you know, understand that we're not this body, and all of Krishna's arguments and the arguments about how we should find out what our duty is, whether in the Varnashram Dharma system or under the guidance of a representative of Krishna, spiritual duties. And do that because it's in our interest. That's advancement. Even for someone to understand that they're not their body is quite advancement. But it's not possible to just understand we're not this body by realization unless we follow the rest of the Bhagavad Gita. So part of it is we should know what our interest is. That's the arguments Krishna is giving. Krishna has been speaking Bhagavad Gita since time immemorial, so he knows people's psychology. He's learned a lot since time immemorial. So he knows people are selfish, but they don't know what their self-interest is. And Krishna, we're not about to completely give up. Even our selfish interest is not this body, but to a certain extent it is. There's higher and lower states of material existence, and most people find it better to be in a higher state of existence. You're healthier, you live longer, you're happier, in the higher states of existence. So Krishna is giving the arguments about how to satisfy our external selfish nature, how to have a better position in the material world, to Arjuna. So we should consider that also. That Krishna consciousness and the duties of Krishna consciousness, the activities, not only Krishna consciousness, but even Varna and Ashram, they're favorable towards a better life in this material existence. Because people don't follow Varna and Ashram, they're living like, we could say they're living like animals. Of course, people don't, they're dogs nowadays. They don't mind living like, they think living like an animal is pretty good. And a matter of fact, compared to how they're working, it is probably pretty good. So people don't mind their lifestyle. But if they experience, for instance, eating prasadam, nice vegetarian food cooked in ghee, compared to what they're eating, then they notice there's a big difference. If they live a more regulated life, they don't stay up late and take intoxication, and et cetera, et cetera. They notice they feel better. They're healthier. They're more peaceful. They're friendlier. So they can notice there's a difference, even by just following the basic lifestyle. Just like in India, there's a certain, even there's some remnants of the culture, Veda culture, civilized life, and therefore, generally, the students and Indian students who are coming out of their culture, who have at least previously didn't do so many sinful activities, of course nowadays everyone has become equally sinful, but they were usually brighter. And they were reluctant, more reluctant than when they first get to America. Anyone who gets to America or the Western world after a while gets spoiled. I remember when I was in distributing books in Chinatown in America, the first thing you ask the Chinese people there that come by is, how long have you been in America? And if it's been longer than 6 months, they were all spoiled. They lost their culture. And if it was less than 6 months, then they all took books, because we were dressed in dhotis and we had shaven heads. And for them, giving charity to monks was part of their culture. But it only took 6 months to lose that culture. So they had a little piety, and you come to the Western world and it's all get taken away very shortly. In any case, Krishna is giving some arguments for piety at the beginning, and we should take them, you know, examine them, and understand that even if we don't have so much faith sometimes in Krishna, but we should know what is our interest, what is our selfish interest, even the material concept of life. And now Krishna will go into what our interest is more from the point of view of karma yoga. That there's no, for instance, Krishna will say, there's no loss on this path. So what path in the material world don't you have loss in? Do you get eternal benefit from? Is there anything, if you gain the Nobel Prize, can you take it with you when you leave your body? Your next lifetime, you're in math class, you're in the first grade math class, and they say 1 + 1 = 2. You say, wait a second, I got the Nobel Prize, what are you trying to teach me for? Really, when did you get it? My last lifetime, I remember. So how much is 1 + 1? I don't remember. I guess I got to learn the whole thing all over again. We don't take anything with us, except for our sinful reactions. But in this path, even we get our sinful reactions for our materialistic activities, still whatever we do devotionally, we carry with us in our next lifetime. So what's a better activity than that? Where you get permanent, eternal benefit for what you do. Can you name any material activity where you get permanent benefit from it? No. So that Krishna points out in the next section, and how if you think that doing pious activities will bring you to the heavenly planets, etc., etc., then it doesn't work that way. You can get some result, but compared to devotional service, it's insignificant. Because you rid yourself, et cetera, et cetera. You rid yourself of all your anxieties, both in this life and in the next, et cetera. So Krishna will talk about karma yoga, its glory, all the benefits of it. And then after that, he'll talk about jnana yoga, the benefits of it. He'll give progressively reasons why we should perform these activities, either in the beginning of the Varna and Ashram, or in the higher realms of Varna Ashram, all the benefits you get to Arjuna. And finally, Krishna will talk about, also in the preceding sections, spirit, all about the glories of spiritual life, eventually. How you can see everyone equally, and you can actually understand what's going on, and that ultimately you become peaceful, the fifth chapter. Krishna will talk about peace as a possibility if you accept Krishna as the Supreme Person. So everyone's looking for peace. Everyone would like to have a peaceful mind, because as long as we think we have to leave this body today, tomorrow, how can you be peaceful? So how to establish a consciousness in Krishna, even in this, while we're living in the material world, so we can actually be on, we can realize who we are, we can realize Krishna, we can realize everything, and therefore actually become peaceful even during this lifetime. And then after that, Krishna will go over in the fifth chapter also. If you're peaceful, then you can think about Krishna. And if you think about Krishna, then you can become happy. And then Krishna in the sixth chapter will describe about how to think about him in the Ashtanga Yoga system, which may just take, you know, a few hundred births, but anyhow, there's the process of doing it. Or in the next chapter, Krishna says, well, you can just hear about me, and then you'll think about me, and you go about the spiritual world. What do you want to do? Go through Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, as Gop Kumar in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita took many, many lifetimes to get to the platform of pure devotional service to Krishna, and therefore it took him actually literally hundreds of lifetimes to go back to the spiritual world. So Krishna is saying, this is better than just gross material activities or not doing your duty. This is better than that. This is better than that. This is better than that. And devotional service is the best. And you can do devotional service right away. It's the easiest, and you can do it right away. Or you can go step by step through all these difficult processes. It may take you many, many, many lifetimes. But eventually you'll get to devotional service, the easy path, relatively easier, and you can reach perfection. So either you can waste hundreds of lifetimes. I mean, right now we're thinking, oh, devotional service is so slow. I'm making so slow progress. Well, try Karma Yoga. You know, try these other things. And if you think, well, I'm going to surpass Karma Yoga, I'm just going to do yoga. Well, point out someone to me who can sit. The Prabhupada once said, yes, we'll apply the teachings of Bhagavad Gita in our temple, the sixth chapter. He said, you can have a room in the temple, in the guest house, or actually in the gurukul, and you can put a kusa grass on the ground, on one of the floors, and you can put a deer skin on it, and then whoever wants to practice Ashtanga Yoga and can sit on it and lick at his nose all day long. And try to meditate on Vishnu. Let's see how many people can do that. Or you can chant Hare Krishna and take prasadam. That's the choice. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
I don't really understand the difference between Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga.
Well, Karma Yoga, as Prabhupada writes, when one knows that the goal is Krishna, but one takes it's attached to the results of his activities, he's said to be acting in Karma Yoga. When one knows that the goal is Krishna, and tries to understand Krishna through philosophical speculation, but takes pleasure in speculation, he's said to be acting in Jnana Yoga. One knows that the goal is Krishna, and simply acts to please Krishna, without attachment to the results, and just with firm faith that Krishna is the Supreme, then one is said to be acting in Bhakti Yoga, simply out of love for Krishna. So, probably, to some, of course. We're doing what's called Mishra Karma Karma Yoga, Mishra Yoga, Mishra Karma Karma Yoga, or Mishra Jnana Yoga, mixed up with Jnana Yoga, or sometimes we may even do a little Bhakti Yoga too. It's not that, you know, we're necessarily just stuck. As it says in the Nectar Devotion, out of the five powerful activities, chanting the holy name, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, worshipping the deity, living in a holy place, and serving the devotees, if one is able to concentrate his mind on one of these activities, he can experience bhava, ecstasy, which is the goal of sadhana bhakti. So that ecstasy, that's bhakti. Now, we may not always experience it, but even if we get a little closer to it, we're getting closer to real bhakti. Otherwise, what are we here for? I mean, we don't have Bhagavad Gita contests. You get an extra prasadam if you... We used to have that, actually, for the Krishna book. We didn't get any more prasadam. I mean, we're here because we want to become ecstatic in love of Krishna. So we get closer to it sometimes. Sometimes our minds are more fixed on what we're doing, and we're a little further away. So by practice, gradually we'll become purified and we'll be able to fix our minds on Krishna. And therefore we'll become free from the contaminations of Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga and Astanga Yoga. They're there, but, you know, they go away after some practice of devotional service in Krishna consciousness. Only time separates us. Anything else? Khala Grandraj Shrimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.